This program is brought to you by Cabinet, a nonprofit arts organization based in Brooklyn, New York. Cabinet depends on your support to continue our activities. For more information, visit us online at cabinetmagazine.org.
The following recording is of William Carlos Williams' Anatomy of a Poem, the fifth installment of Cabinet's Poetry Lab series, organized by D. Graham Burnett and Jeff Dolvin. It took place on March 11th, 2011.
Is precisely to resuscitate dead poets by unorthodox means. And the Poetry Lab has been on hiatus now while Cabinet was redoing this magnificent space. It's nice to see some old friends who've seen the space since it's been redone. For those of you who are here perhaps for the first time, know that this place has been radically transformed in the last 6 months, which is pretty special. And if you're not on the email list for Cabinet and you're here for the first time, make sure we've got a sign-up list so we can get you on the email list, not just for Poetry Lab, for other kind of stuff as well. So the mashups of Poetry Lab in general are occasions for the investigation of what else one can do with a poem. And to tell you a little bit more about how we plan to get out a poem sideways, if you will, I introduce to you Dr. Dolvin, who will hold forth on our theme for this evening.
Thank you, Dr. Burnett. It is the general practice here at Poetry Lab to try to think our way into what poems need from us that they don't ordinarily get. So we often approach them as makers, ministers. And today, under the auspices of the Medico-Poetical School, founded by William Carlos Williams, we approach them as doctors. You may often have felt that a poem has come into your office or even walked up to your doorstep. And it's a fine poem, but it needs something. It needs maybe a little help. It's not quite its best self. It could use a tonic. It could use a cure. It could use a little quick surgery, and you're hardly equipped to do that, right? Well, you're better equipped than you think you are. And this evening, a three-course program of study, the details of which Dr. Burnett will introduce to us, will equip you to minister to poems that need our medical attention. And our guiding spirit in this inquiry and in this training, for here we all are in the William Carlos Williams School of Medical Poetics. Our guiding spirit is William Carlos Williams himself, the great American poet, bard of Paterson, New Jersey, who was all his life a medical doctor, a general practitioner, and who was trained at the University of Pennsylvania. No ideas but in things, he's famous for saying. No words but in bodies is our slogan for the evening. William Carlos Williams, a medical practitioner, but even as a poet already, one could say, a surgeon of sorts, in the sense that if you look at a poem of his on the page, you see how cut up it is, how unlike the evenly apportioned lines of iambic pentameter it is. And that's not free verse, says Williams. Those are very precise cuts, cuts in language intended to bring out the phrasing of the way we speak day to day in Paterson or in Gowanus. So we will be taking his own surgery with the language, the surgery that you see down the right margin of a poem, a step further, or perhaps a few steps further. And exactly how we're going to do that, Dr. Burnett.
So if you're not in front of one of the poem pinboard, dissection boards, you haven't yet teamed up, think about doing that, because it'll probably make sense. Some of you may wish to work on your own. If you do, we've got some extras up here. But it's a participatory occasion. Teamwork is encouraged as you settle in. And what we're going to do over the next hour will be three basic phases of your formation in the School of Medico-Poetics. So that'll be three roughly 15-minute exercises under the three basic rubrics. Do we have any medical doctors or paramedics in the house? Interesting. Well, that's a source of concern to me because we were hoping we could rely on some of that expertise. Yeah, maybe we could have some alternative practitioners step to the fore. We'll be thinking in three phases: anatomy, pathology, and then you'll be ready for your residency. anatomy, about which Dr. Dalvin will dilate in just a moment, will be our first exercise. And you'll be working, in a sense, to think about the mashup of the scansion of prosody and paper sculpture in your diagrammatic exercises. So here, I think I've got it here for you. Yes, so, we'll go from that to an exercise in pathology. The first phase, as Jeff's going to discuss in just a moment, is really going to... Sorry. Will only involve basically using your colored pencils to work out its anatomy. We're going to study the structure and systems of the poem. It's in phase two, where we move to pathology, that we'll be getting out the equipment. So again, do not drink too much before phase two, because you have scalpels on your desk. You have forceps, clamps, and what you'll be doing in phase two is, we'll discuss it in more detail as we go, but you'll literally begin to make some interventions in these poems. Remove their bits, close them back up. We've got some sutures that I'll be handing out in a moment. You can, but that'll really just be practicing your skills for the final stage. We'll give you some new poems for phase two, right? You're only using this poem for phase one. Final phase, we're going to bring in a poem in a kind of real-world situation, a poem that we think is a mess and that you need to go to work on. You'll both need to diagnose it, and then you'll need to make some decisions as a team about what it needs to be made whole, repaired, gotten through to at least paramedic functional vitality, and then that's what you'll be doing for the last 15-minute exercise. Anatomy, pathology, and then you'll be ready for your residency. So with that, to talk a little bit about the anatomy of a poem, I'm going to give you Dr. Dalvin, and some of you will know that Dalvin is actually, when he's not in his mummery here at Cabinet, probably now the world's leading expert on poetic prosody. So the man knows whereof he speaks. I'll give you Dr. Dalvin on the anatomy of a poem.
Dr. Burnett, thank you very much. So one large auspice under which this enterprise proceeds is the idea that poetry is particularly a thing of parts. We might think instinctively of a poem as being an exceptionally unified kind of language, right? Poem is something that holds together better than anything else. But the other side of that observation, which has a lot to be said for it, is that it is also much more intricately partitioned than anything else we encounter by way of language. Think about the line breaks, think about stanza breaks, all the ways in which poems signal that they're not the continuous sprawl across the page of prose. And the, you know, the other side of that idea of a poem's unity is all of the various parts that we discover corresponding to one another. So there is a question here about anatomy of poems and poems as having an anatomical complexity that perhaps exceeds other species of language we might encounter. Now, the exercise in anatomy. Your challenge as beginning students, first-term students in the William Carlos Williams School of Medical Poetics, is to disaggregate from the poem in front of you, which is called Daisy, three systems. And those systems are as follows. First, the skeletal system. Second, the muscular system. And third, the nervous system. And it will be up to you to discern where in the poem each of those systems lies. A few words about each of them. The skeletal system. Well, that's what gives the poem its structure, right? The poem sort of stands up and holds together by virtue of what words, what phrases, what parts, what gaps between the parts does the poem stand up altogether. So what is its skeletal system? And to mark that skeletal system on the page, you'll use your black pencil. Second system, muscular. How does this poem get where it's going, right? And where is it going? Does it have ways of moving? Does it have ways of lifting or doing? What are the words, again, what are the phrases that do that? Those are the components of the poem's muscular system. And finally, the nervous system. Presumably this poem both has appreciations of feeling, moments of sensitivity, and also sort of responses to stimulus in the world, and also ways of expressing feeling. That would be its nervous system, from its brain to the sensitive tips of its fingers. And you also want to identify that as one here. And you will, as sort of surgical teams in training, working out on your own the graphic conventions by which you represent these things. So those are the three colors, I should say, black for the skeleton, red for the muscles, and green for the nervous system. If you discover along the way in the other system, there are other colored pencils, you might find that it respires, but we're going to focus on those three. And think flexibly about the graphical conventions that you adopt. As a team, pause a little bit over the poem and sort of think about, you know, if I want to represent how muscle action works through a poem, how do I draw the lines of its force, for example? Muscular motion, have an arrow-like vector to it. Sensitivity of the sort that the nervous system exhibits. Does it have tendrils that reach out? And if they reach out, where do they reach? Any questions, students in your first term?
As people think about questions, I'll make just one other quick note, which is for those of you who've spent some time online, you'll have seen that oftentimes these events issue in stuff to look at, objects. So we've actually got, we'll have some pins up on that cardboard wall of the remains of the Solowit show. And as we finish these stages, we want to pin up some stuff we can look at. That'll be great, and we'll also be doing some documentary stuff, taking pictures, because stuff ends up on the website to sort of show what the Poetry Lab has been about. So know that that may be happening around you, and cover your patient if you're nervous about that.
Drs. Burnett and I will be available for consultation over the course of the next 15 minutes, but we now leave it to you, and Dr. Burnett's reminder is a good one. Part of our agenda is to think about, understand these poems, disaggregate their anatomy, also perhaps make something beautiful.
Okay.
Can we read the poem?
Oh, that's my job, right.
Yes.
I blew it. Okay, I do it. It's because I think my mic's a little on blast. Okay. Daisy. The day's eye hugging the earth in August, ha! Spring is gone down in purple weeds. Stand high in the corn. The rain-beaten furrow is clotted with sorrel and crabgrass. The branch is black under the heavy mass of the leaves. The sun is upon a slender green stem ribbed lengthwise. He lies on his back. It is a woman also. He regards his former majesty, and round the yellow center, split and creviced and done into minute flower heads, he sends out his 20 rays. A little, and the wind is among them to grow cool there. One turns the thing over in his hand and looks at it from the rear, brown-edged, green and pointed scales armor his yellow. But turn and turn, the crisp petals remain brief, translucent, green fastened, barely touching at the edges, blades of limpid seashell. Okay, go to it. And we've got some musical accompaniment for you. Yeah. Great. So that is about, we're about at 15 minutes. So I hope that you, I hope you've kind of got, you thought your way into this poem. It does feel a little hard to begin to imagine letting it go already, but we do have another set. I think it's possible to imagine that if you've developed something of a sense of a connection to this poem, you may have discovered that it has certain needs or problems vis-a-vis your analysis. You may be able to come back to it to do a little work on it after you've worked up your skills. But a little bit like you might work up your skills, you know, on the notorious lab rat, we are now going to move to phase two, pathology. So Dr. Dalvin is handing around a set of three short poems, which each of which we've basically determined is experiencing some form of blockage or has some unhappy internal growth that needs to be attended to. So I'm now handing around the pathology exercise for you to consider as you turn to this set of three poems for your pathology exercises. So take a moment to read through the pathology sheet as we move here, and you know, take a look at the poems, and we'll feel our way in. Now, part of the exercise here is to begin to practice your paper sculptural powers. So don't be afraid now to open the boxes of incredibly sharp razor-like scalpels, which are on all of your desks, begin to think about how you're going to use that. Pin these new poems down and think about how to go after them. So when you've had a chance, I will give everybody a minute to read through these, and then I'm going to hand things over to Dr. Dalvin to talk a little bit about what we'll be doing in this next 15-minute block as you work your tools.
So you'll see this is the pathology phase. Something is wrong with these poems, and there are three of them, and they're short. So it's an exercise in swift diagnosis and decisive action. And there are three likely diagnoses. One is appendicitis. That is, there is something extraneous in this poem which has become baleful and needs excision. Appendicitis, one possibility. Another possibility, tonsillitis.
There's something obstructing the speech in this poem that behooves you to cut out.
And then to suture the poem back together to survive that excision. And then finally, the question of a bypass operation. That is, there are parts of this poem that are not adequately communicating with one another and will need to be connected for the poem to thrive. The thriving of the poem is, in each case, your objective here. You may find that of these three poems, you distribute evenly the three possible diagnoses. You might find that you have three cases of appendicitis on your hands. Who knows?
Now, I'm sorry, I just want, on a quick technical matter, to show you how to open your scalpels so as not permanently to injure yourselves. You'll notice that they're in sterile packets, which is significant. We don't want any infection in any of these poems. Take it at one end, and you want to snap it open at the end that is protected with the plastic cover over the blade. Then drawing down, you may want to have somebody else do this for you, just like they do in the movies, right? So that whoever's got the gloves on can then remove the scalpel and the protective cover on the scalpel so you're in a position to make your incisions. You'll want to make sure you've pinned down. You don't want to be like kind of free-forming. This isn't a fencing exercise, so you don't want to be free-forming on these poems. You need to pin your poems down. You may want to take a moment to give them a look and make your diagnostic decisions about what needs attention, and then you're going to go ahead in and open them up. I hand it back to Dr. Dalvin to carry on.
And use the full resources of your training to this point for this practice. So you'll be working, you'll be thinking about systems, you can use the colored pencils to make some of the connections, you can suture the pieces together, you can use, there is surgical tape at each table which you can use to make the connections.
Another quick, just one, Sal, a question. Let's attention.
Could you just briefly clarify the difference between appendicitis and pneumonia? Because it seems to involve an excision.
Right.
So why are those two kinds of removals different?
I think that one could be resident anywhere in the person of the poem, or perhaps particularly down around here, whereas the other is resident in the poem.
Or a different way to put it is that one is centrally concerned with the problems of the poem's voice, and the other is centrally concerned with the poem's capacity to eat the world.
Yes!
Now, again, quickly, for the skills-based phase of this exercise, I want to review that you've got your clamps here on everybody's table, and you want to take a minute to make sure you're comfortable with the clamp if you haven't already done some paramedical work. So the clamp is for the sutures, and the sutures are very tricky. Again, there are suture packs on everybody's table. If you find yourself ambitious in this paper sculptural exercise, you'll need to open the suture pack, remove carefully, knowing that there are razor-sharp needles inside the suture pack. Remove the suture pack. And then what you'll find, they're all different, so you can practice different sizes. You'll find the half-moon-shaped needle, which needs to be clamped and removed like that. And then with the assistance of somebody at your table, you'll go for the point where you need to close, and you'll just make simple over-unders, easy top knot, to seal it back up, okay? So just, you know, experiment, get comfortable with your equipment, because remember, we're headed for the residency where the stakes are a little higher with a poem called May 1st, Tomorrow, which is what's coming down the pipe. Anything else?
Just so.
Okay, go. We probably should, although people have gotten going. Don't you have one of them recorded?
Yes.
So do that one.
This is just to say, I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me. They were delicious, so sweet, and so cold.
You may need extra pins for working on it. Here, I've got some additional pins. So I think we're basically ready to wrap on phase two, and you're all very close to promotable to your residencies. I will suggest that as we sort of transition to this last phase, if there are any of your exercises that you'd like to share with us, there are a few of them that have started to end up pinned up on the board there. So think about taking something, either your original anatomy exercise or something of these surgical excisions that you've worked on, and letting us see them. Don't be shy. So to introduce phase three, the residency, I give you again Dr. Dalvin.
Welcome all to the residency phase of your training. The pinnacle, please, the pinnacle of your training here at the William Carlos Williams School of Medico-Poetics. And let me send those around. Let me begin by introducing to you your patient. Triage is a part of any doctor's life. You've been working hard on these poems, but now a patient with specially urgent issues presents himself, and here he is.
May 1st, tomorrow. The mind's a queer sponge. Squeeze it, and out come bird songs, small leaves, highly enameled, and moments of good reading, rapidly. Tuck, 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 tuck. The mind remembering, not in flux, that diarrhea, but nesting, gee-woo, tuck. The male mind nesting, glancing up from a letter from a friend, asking the mind to be squeezed and let him be the liquor, which when we release it, he shall be sopped up all his weight and released again by squeezing. Full, it molds itself like a brown breast, full not of milk, but of what breasts are to the eye, hemispherical, too would make a sphere to the mind, and view of the mind that in a way gives milk, that liquor that minds feed upon, to feed now, chuck, 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 to eat, chuck, burdensome, as twin stones that the mind alone can milk and give again, chee woo, etc.
You read it too?
Sure. Yeah,
here you go. This one needs work, okay? Just try to stay calm. Stay calm when you reach a situation like this.
It's being wheeled in on the gurney. It's the opinion of the faculty that this is a poem that needs your help. And you now have the training to help it. So bear in mind as you go, I'll read it one more time just to get it in our ears and explore some of its pressing issues. But bear in mind that you're bringing to bear every talent, every skill that you've learned over the course of the evening. They will be urgently required by this poem, and that includes the identification of the various systems. Who knows which system in this poem may have failed? The identification of particular pathologies, whether it's an organ gone bad or tonsillitis or the need of a bypass. And you also have one additional recourse, which Dr. Burnett will describe.
Now and again, some of you have already begun to think in this direction, but now and again you can reach a situation where an organ system simply fails. And that demands a transplant. And I know there's been some exploration of these possibilities, but for this poem, we actually have an organ bank available to you. And so, you know, I'll be passing this around, and after you've made your diagnoses, you may want to consult here and see if we've got the stuff that this poem needs, in your opinion. It's conceivable some of you will assess this poem as being a Siamese twin in need of one of the most difficult operations, a separation of two complete and viable poetic entities out of this tragically composed monster. But I leave these kinds of assessments to you. Only you can bring to bear your medico-poetical gifts on this situation. Shall we give it another sounding?
Here it is on the gurney, May 1st, tomorrow. The mind's a clear sponge. Squeeze it, and out come bird songs. Small leaves, highly enameled, and moments of good reading, rapidly. Tuck, 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 tuck. The mind remembering, no, not in flux, that diarrhea, but nesting. Chee-woo, tuck! The male mind nesting. Glancing up from a letter from a friend, asking the mind to be squeezed and let him be the liquor, which, when we release it, he shall be sopped up all his weight and released again by squeezing. Full it molds itself, like a brown breast full not of milk, but of what breasts are to the eye, hemispherical too would make a sphere, to the mind, a view of the mind that in a way gives milk, that liquor that minds feed upon. To feed now, chuck, 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 to eat, chuck! Burdensome as twin stones that the mind alone can milk and give again. Chee-woo, etc. Your work is clear,
do
doctors.
What you can.
This is the crucial test of your residency, and we wish you good luck.
Do what you can.
Do what you can.
Chuck, chuck, chuck. This is the part of the evening when someone sits on a scalpel, which we don't want. Yeah, do think, this is the part of the evening, where someone sits on a scalpel. Think, cover scalpels, beware of sutures. We're right about at the point where we can laureate you each with your respective diploma from the School of Medical Poetics. You've now acquired a set of skills. We want you, of course, to take very seriously the responsibility of being a seeker of the health and welfare of poems as you go forth.
Yes, that is. It is both a credential and a responsibility. You'll now have some sense that there are poems around us, among us, that are in need. Some of them are perfect and flourishing. Others of them suffer secret wounds that require the attention of just such skilled practitioners as you yourselves now are. So we very much hope here on the faculty of the William Carlos Williams School of Medico-Poetics that in training this evening's class, we've prepared readers, writers, and surgeons who will minister with compassion and skill to the needs of poems wherever you encounter them.
I was quite touched, I have to say, you know, something we didn't even discuss, but there was a group at the back that were actually moving right to mouth resuscitation on one of the poems, which is just a kind of such an amazing thing to see, giving the breath of life in that situation and other forms of attention to these things. So things are going to break up. I'm going to walk around with a box for your sharps. So this is labeled medical waste, and this will help us avoid having serious injuries as you stagger forth. And I want to make one more suggestion. Please don't let us down on pegging a few more things up. It was so great to look at some things that went up from the first round. And let me suggest, just one more suggestion, that as things begin to kind of wind down, we do something like grand rounds. So we're going to listen. We're going to kind of close the evening by hearing William Carlos Williams himself one more time. But think grand rounds, great tradition of medical schools everywhere. You would kind of make the rounds and check out some patients and see what you've done. So I would invite you guys to make the rounds of the table and see how people handled May 1st, tomorrow, and what kinds of interventions were made on it. So we'll talk some of that through in the next 15 minutes.
And congratulations.
Congratulations. Here we go. One more with the
this
man.
This is just to say, I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox and which you were probably saving for breakfast. Forgive me. They were delicious, so sweet, and so cold.
Maybe. Okay.
Thank you.
Sharps. Cheers. Yeah, medical waste. Not the. Let's keep those separate. The clamps separate. Yeah, just the sharps.
And thanks to Sina Najafi.